Welcome to a very special edition of Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. Today, we had the pleasure of speaking with Jacob Sands, MD, a physician at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and an instructor in medicine at Harvard Medical School, to discuss the FDA approval of lurbinectedin for the treatment of adult patients with metastatic small cell lung cancer with disease progression following platinum-based chemotherapy. The agent was approved on June 15, 2020, under the FDA's Accelerated Approval Program, which allows for the conditional approval of a therapy that fills an unmet need for a serious or life-threatening disease or condition. It has been difficult to develop an effective and tolerable second-line therapy for patients with resistant and rapidly progressive small cell lung cancer, explained Sands, and the approval of lurbinectedin has helped to address this area of unmet need. The regulatory decision is based on data from an open-label single-arm Phase 2 basket trial of 105 patients with small cell lung cancer who progressed on platinum-containing chemotherapy. In the trial, patients received 3.2 milligrams per meter squared of lurbinectedin as a one-hour intravenous infusion once every 3 weeks until either progressive disease or unacceptable toxicity. Results from the trial showed that treatment with lurbinectedin led to an overall response rate of 35.2% and a disease control rate of 68.6%. Moreover, a median duration of response of 5.3 months was reported with lurbinectedin per investigator assessment. Additional results showed that the majority of the patients, or 65%, experienced a reduction in tumor size. Notably, responses were reported in 5 of 8 patients in whom prior immunotherapy had failed. A total of 28 patients, or 26.7%, experienced disease progression, and 5 patients were not evaluable. Earlier results showed that response rates with lurbinectedin were higher in patients with platinum-sensitive disease. Among those patients, the ORR was 45% versus 22.2% in those with platinum-resistant disease. The median progression-free survival was 3.9 months, and the 6-month PFS rate was 33.6%. In those with platinum-sensitive disease, the median PFS was 4.6 months, and the 6-month PFS rate was 44.6%. In those with platinum-resistant disease, the median PFS was 2.6 months, and the 6-month PFS rate was 18.8 months. At a median follow-up of 17.1 months, the median overall survival with lurbinectedin was 9.3 months. The 12-month OS rate was 34.2%. In patients who were platinum-sensitive, the median OS was 11.9 months versus 5 months in patients who were platinum-resistant. Regarding safety, all grade adverse effects were reported in 84.8% of patients. The most common grade 1-2 AEs with the agent included fatigue, nausea, decreased appetite, vomiting, diarrhea, constipation, and neutropenia. A total of 34.3% of patients experienced a grade 3 or greater AE. The most commonly reported grade 3-4 AEs were hematologic, including anemia, leukopenia, neutropenia, and thrombocytopenia. Serious treatment-related AEs were reported in 10.5% of patients. Of these effects, neutropenia and febrile neutropenia were the most commonly reported. Discontinuations, dose delays, and dose reductions related to AEs were reported in 1.9%, 22.1%, and 26.3% of patients, respectively. No toxicity-related deaths were reported. In our exclusive interview, Sands discussed the FDA approval of lurbinectedin in small cell lung cancer and shed light on key findings from the Phase 2 basket trial that served as the basis for the approval.
What does the approval of lurbinectedin bring to patients with metastatic small cell lung cancer? How do you see it impacting the paradigm?
So second-line small cell lung cancer has been a really challenging clinical scenario. These patients have very aggressive, often rapidly progressive disease. They clinically decline quickly as well, and we have very limited treatment options. So this now is an FDA-approved option that does appear to be a little better efficacy, a little better tolerability than some of the other studies we've seen of doing cross-trial comparison, but essentially providing a viable treatment option with some efficacy that is also tolerated well enough to be viable.
So could you just provide a little bit of background on the drug itself and the data from the phase 2 trial that served as the basis for the approval?
Yeah, so lurbinectedin binds to DNA gene promoters. It prevents binding of transcription factors. And in this, it then leads to cell apoptosis. So this is a mechanism of action. The efficacy across the board, we saw responses at chemotherapy-free intervals less than 90 days, as well as chemotherapy-free intervals of greater than 90 days, which was the stratification of pre-specified groups. We saw response rates of about 35% total across these, with durability in some patients up to a year or beyond. Those with the chemotherapy-free interval of less than 90 days versus the greater than 90 days, we do see clear differences in those curves. And so the number of people with durability and responses, as well as the median in those groups, it was smaller in that less than 90 days. But there was efficacy within that, and some patients who had some durability. And I think that that's part of what led to the FDA approval of this drug across the board.
And do you see platinum sensitivity playing a role in who you give this drug to?
Well, platinum sensitivity ends up being a really important thing as far as looking at who ends up having better prognosis in general. So this is prognostically important. It does impact our expectations with this drug like all others. I personally see this as a good treatment option for all patients. We see patients who have progression quickly after prior platinum-based therapy, as we said, poor prognostic scenario, but this drug, we do see some durability to responses. So there was a patient who had a 9-month progression-free survival that had a chemotherapy-free interval of less than 90 days. So poor prognosis, but good outcome. Now, of course, the outcomes are not as good in general with this drug in the chemotherapy-free interval of less than 90 days, as is true with all of the other therapies. So to really get to the heart of your question, I see this as a viable option for all patients, even though this, of course, is prognostic in itself and the expectations of the outcomes is not the same.
And then in terms of its safety profile, what should we be aware of?
So as far as patient experience on this drug, the safety profile is very good. Fatigue was about 12% of patients, grade 3-4 fatigue. This is a population of patients where fatigue is often an issue and where this is a clinically challenging scenario where the disease causes a lot of symptoms as well. Where we really saw more of the side effect profile of this drug is in what we see in the lab. So particularly cytopenia. There was in the 40% of patients with grade 3-4 a neutropenia, but 5% of patients had a febrile neutropenia. So, of course, we see cell counts drop, but ultimately not impacting their treatment. I'll point out that primary prophylaxis with G-CSF was not allowed in this trial, so none of the patients got that in the beginning. But secondary prophylaxis was used after patients had deep neutropenia or investigator discretion. As mentioned, 5% of patients had a febrile neutropenia, so in a pretty reasonable range for those who are getting cytotoxic kinds of therapy. So it was 1.9% of patients that actually ended up stopping the drug due to adverse events. So generally very well-tolerated drug, which is important in this clinical situation. So even in the patients who end up not benefiting from the drug with efficacy, you're not really harming them in the process. And I think that's a really important thing to consider in this patient population where it is so challenging to treat them. You, of course, want to make sure that the side effects are not really worsening their quality of life, and this was well-tolerated.
Is there any other element of the trial or the approval that you wanted to emphasize that I didn't ask you about?
Well, I think one other thing to point out is the fact that we now have in the frontline setting chemotherapy plus immunotherapy, and that is a bit different than what the paradigm was at the time that the basket trial started. That being said, I don't think it changes any decision-making in this process. It is still important for patients to have gotten a checkpoint inhibitor, and I think the data from those trials I still find very compelling in that when it's efficacious, it tends to work really well. But as we know, it's really a small subset of patients that benefit so much from those checkpoint inhibitors. If patients got chemotherapy plus a checkpoint inhibitor in the front line, I think this still remains a very viable next line option. And now with FDA approval, it certainly is my preference.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to Onc Live On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science summits and institutional perspectives and cancer webinars. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.